Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Francine Foss and Anish Chagpar. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. Dr. Chagpar is associate professor of surgical oncology and director of the Breast Center at Smilow Cancer Hospital. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This week, Dr. Chagpar welcomes Dr. Frank Detterbeck. Dr. Detterbeck is professor of surgery in the section of thoracic surgery and chief of thoracic surgery at Yale School of Medicine. Here's Anish Chagpar.
Why don't we start off by having you tell us a little bit about what you do and your involvement with lung cancer?
Well, so I'm a thoracic surgeon, and so obviously I operate on people with lung cancer, but I've really been involved with lung cancer in a lot of different ways, and I'm very involved with a lot of national and international societies. Actually the vice chair of the ACCP lung cancer guidelines. New edition is coming out in the next couple of months, and I'm part of the international staging committee. I'm involved in a lot of different ways.
Oh, that's great. So tell us a little bit more about what you do here at Yale and what you do at Smilow Cancer Hospital. I understand that you've really taken on a big leadership role in terms of the lung cancer program here as well.
Well, I'm the director of the Yale Thoracic Oncology Program. I think that, many things in medicine, but in particular oncology, has become sort of a team sport. And you really need to have people from different specialties putting their heads together, not just, I think, once in a while, but, really overall to provide the optimal care. And so we've kind of organized our approach that way so that really every patient sort of gets the benefit of that collective wisdom and judgment.
And so let's start there. So how do people get into the thoracic oncology program at Yale? For breast cancer, which is what I do, a lot of it starts with screening in the community. So does the same thing happen in lung cancer?
Well, screening is a new thing in lung cancer. So, most people nowadays really present because they have some symptoms. There are a variety of different symptoms that cause lung cancer. Sometimes there's something that's picked up incidentally on a chest X-ray or a CT scan, but most people have some sort of symptoms. They have a cough that doesn't go away, they cough up some blood, they just don't feel well, have a pneumonia that they can't shake, something like that.
And so people present to their family doctor with these symptoms, and so take us through kind of what happens next to this patient.
Well, so we have a team approach. So we have sort of a single intake for, everybody on the team. And it's a team of specialists that, they work in medical oncology or pulmonary medicine or thoracic surgery, for example. But, they really focus their career on lung cancer. So there's, one number to call, and then that number kind of gets you into the team, and we try to anticipate what we're going to need to do so that we can make it one-stop shopping as much as possible. So if we need to get additional tests, we can get them the same day the patient comes in. And we try to work it through so that, at the end of that day, we're really pretty close to having a real plan for how we're going to work things up further or how we're going to treat things.
So do most patients who come to see you already have a diagnosis? Because I'm just thinking, if I'm a patient and I've started to have an uncontrollable cough, it might just be that I have a cough, but it might be that I have lung cancer. So how do I figure out whether I've got cancer or whether this is just routine, cough, cold, pneumonia?
Well, I think most people have a family physician, and I think they go to see their family physician first. And so there's been, a little bit more put into it than just I have a cough and they come to see me. But, most people don't have an actual diagnosis of lung cancer. And in fact, I kind of prefer that, because the reality that I find is that, we can usually pretty efficiently, if we see someone, sort of work through either settling the issue that this is not a cancer at all, or that it is, and what stage is it, and what kind of treatment, you know, efficiently get through that. And I find that when people on the outside are doing too much of that, they often are a little bit inefficient in terms of how many tests they get or what test they go to next. And sometimes I think we can do it a little bit more efficiently.
So they come to see you and you work them up, and you either say to them, you know, congratulations, this is nothing, you really don't need me, or this is in fact a lung cancer and this is what we need to do about that. So when people come to see you and they're presenting with symptoms, tell us a little bit more about generally what kind of stage they're at and what their treatment paradigm involves in that situation.
Well, so, you know, lung cancer is a major cause of cancer deaths. In fact, if you take the next four leading causes of cancer deaths combined, it's less than lung cancer. You know, it's the major cause of cancer deaths. And really, you know, unfortunately, a big part of the reason for that is that the majority of people have advanced stage disease that, you know, by the time they're diagnosed, you know, and that's disease that, you know, we can't cure. Now, we've come a long ways in being able to treat lung cancer. So we have, you know, much better surgery. We do, the vast majority of what we do is minimally invasive surgery involving some small incisions that are just a quarter of an inch to three quarters of an inch. You know, radiation therapy has advanced a lot. Chemotherapy has advanced tremendously. The combination of treatments is what we use for an awful lot of patients with lung cancer, and we can cure more people that way. But you know, the fact is a lot of people present with stage four disease, and although we've gotten a lot better at being able to kind of manage that disease and keep it in check and keep people, you know, doing well despite the fact that we can't cure it, you know, the fact is we still can't cure it, and we struggle with that.
So as you say, I mean, a lot of this is because people present at an advanced stage, because they present when they've got symptoms. So is there a movement or is there a concept now about screening asymptomatic people for lung cancer, and where are we in terms of that?
Well, certainly the idea is not new. It's been around for a long time. You know, what if we can find it earlier by screening? Now, you know, we haven't really done screening before. So there were a number of trials that looked at chest x-ray that didn't work. There was another trial that just recently came out on chest x-ray, again showed that chest x-ray does not work. CT screening has been looked at for really, well, 15 years or more. But, you know, we really didn't have any strong data about whether it clearly did or didn't work until just recently. And now we have some good data that, you know, does actually work. And so that's kind of changed the whole landscape.
So does this mean that everybody should get a CT scan to screen for lung cancer?
Well, no. I think that, you know, screening is a kind of a complex interplay of a lot of different factors. And you have to really take things into account. So, you know, one of them is just your risk of getting cancer. So, you know, to take it to an extreme, it becomes obvious. You know, would you say that your 10-year-old daughter needs to have a CT scan to look for lung cancer? You know, everybody says, well, obviously not. So risk is a major part of it. The other thing is that, you know, there are downsides to screening, and you have to kind of think about those a little bit. And I think to an extent, the risk of downsides is probably relatively even and sort of less dependent on what risk factors you have for lung cancer. And so you have to kind of match the two.
So right now, it seems as though there isn't kind of mass screening, but there's an upside and there's a downside, and you need to kind of balance these. So how does one go about figuring out, you know, the components of a screening program, whether a screening program is a good thing to have, and how you design that?
Well, we have, you know, we have some good data, very good data, actually, from a very large study, the National Lung Screening Trial, that screening a particular group of patients in a, you know, particular sort of setting is, you know, quite effective, actually, reducing cancer deaths. So people that are age 55 to 74 that have at least a 30-pack year history of smoking and have quit less than 15 years ago, you know, that study showed that, you know, those people benefit from screening. Now, things to remember about that is, you know, that was a very organized setting. It was a defined group of people. There were, you know, there was a lot of quality control in how the scan was done. There was a lot of education in how the scan was interpreted. There were systems in place about how findings were managed. And sort of in that setting, this was very useful. And so, you know, that's really the data that we have, is that, you know, done in that way, this can be very useful. On the other hand, if you look at some other data, just in general, if we do things in a less structured way, there's certainly reason to think that, you know, we might be causing a lot more harms. You know, in the screening study, harms were pretty minimal. They were pretty low. But if you don't manage it well, there's a potential for having a lot more sort of downsides. And I just add one other thing. You know, one of the things you have to remember is that, you know, screening is a little different. You know, if you're taking people that are otherwise healthy and you end up with a downside, you end up having caused a problem, you know, it's really, you know, it's sort of an innocent bystander that got affected. You know, it's different from how we usually think of, if you have a disease, well, then you're willing to take some risks to get that disease treated. But if you're perfectly healthy, you know, you have to be careful about taking risks that you don't need to take.
So can you tell us a little bit more about what kinds of risks those might be? Because some of us think about a CT scan just as being a type of X-ray that we may not associate with a lot of risk.
Well, I think that there are a lot of different aspects to this. So, you know, I would say, first of all, you know, one of the problems with CT screening is that we pick up a lot of stuff. You know, about anywhere from 20 to 50% of people are going to have some little things picked up in the CT scan. And, you know, the vast majority of these are nothing. And so if you go worrying about them, if you go chasing them, mm-hmm. you know, you're really chasing your tail. Mm-hmm. And so you have to have a system to not just get the scan, but to sort through what's just noise and what's something you need to worry about. And so that system is an important part of it, not just the scan. So that's one thing. And I think that, you know, managing anxiety about, you know, gosh, we found a little something on your scan, you know, it's certainly a major issue, especially when the vast majority of this is nothing. I think another issue is, so let's say it's something that you say, well, we probably should chase this further. Well, you know, a breast biopsy, for example, I think is a little bit less invasive and less of a big deal than doing a lung biopsy. Doesn't mean you can't do it, but it's just a little bit of a big, you know, less of a big deal. So, you know, that's an issue. There are, you know, certainly are complications from all of that. Sometimes radiation is something that people worry about. The radiation that you get from a low-dose screening scan is pretty low. That's not a big deal. But if you start getting a lot of additional tests, additional diagnostic scans and follow-up and PET and so forth, it starts to add up pretty quickly. And so it's something worth keeping in mind.
Okay, so with that, we're going to take a very short break for a Medical Minute. But please stay tuned to learn more information about screening for lung cancer with our guest today, Dr. Frank Detterbeck.
The American Cancer Society estimates that over 1,000 patients will be diagnosed with melanoma in Connecticut each year. While melanoma accounts for only about 4% of skin cancer cases, it causes the most skin cancer deaths. Early detection is the key. When detected early, melanoma is easily treated and highly curable, and new treatment options and surgical techniques are giving melanoma survivors more hope than they've ever had before. Clinical trials are currently underway at Yale Cancer Center, Connecticut's federally designated comprehensive cancer center, to test innovative new treatments for melanoma. The Specialized Programs of Research Excellence in Skin Cancer grant at Yale, also known as the SPOR grant, will help establish national guidelines on modifying behavior and on prevention, as well as identification of new drug targets. This has been a Medical Minute, brought to you as a public service by Yale Cancer Center. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Anise Chagpar, and I'm joined today by my guest, Dr. Frank Detterbeck. And we were discussing just before the break a bit about screening for lung cancer. So, Frank, tell us a little bit more. You know, we had started the conversation by talking about how really in today's era, we don't have a lot of good screening programs for lung cancer, and that there are a number of advantages and disadvantages of screening. So tell us a little bit about the program that you've developed here at Yale, and what really are the components of an ideal program, and how you've really taken advantage of that.
Well, I think the components of an ideal program are that you really need to assess risk. You know, you need to pick the, you know, population that, you know, that is at risk. I think that you need to talk to people and sort of manage anxiety. Most people are coming in because they're anxious about lung cancer, and you have a pretty high chance of finding some little, you know, noise on the scan. And so, you know, you have to make sure that you manage that well. I think that smoking cessation is a very important part. If people are still smoking, you know, screening is not going to prevent lung cancer. It may detect it early, but the best thing you can do is to stop smoking if you're still smoking to prevent it. So that certainly should be part of it. I think that the whole process of how the scan is done should be low dose, how it's interpreted, you know, how findings are managed. You know, we don't want to over-treat or, you know, get too excited and chase things that we shouldn't chase. At the same time, we don't want to under-treat and, you know, miss something that's there. And so, you know, that process is pretty important. And then, you know, I think that really an ideal program should be sort of adding to further definition of how we should do it, because the fact is, you know, we still have a lot of questions. You know, we know that it can be useful, but do we need to screen every year? Do we screen, you know, forever? Do we, you know, stop at a certain age? You know, how do we manage all that? You know, we've got a lot of unanswered questions.
So it sounds like this is really getting back to a whole multidisciplinary approach with a whole team of people who give their expertise to various components of this screening program, and building in a layer of research as well.
Yeah. So, you know, that's really what we did in setting up the Yale Scan program. And, you know, I guess having been part of systematic review of all the data that's out there and kind of writing guidelines for lung cancer, we tried hard to, you know, make it evidence-based and to do all the things that we think we need to have. So, you know, there are a number of features that I think are relatively unique. So, you know, in terms of assessing risk, let's start there. Mm-hmm. There are, you know, you can do it just sort of very crudely and just say, well, okay, age 55 to 74, you know, if you smoked, and, you know, that's good enough. But there are actually a lot of risk models out there that have taken into account different aspects. You know, none of the models are perfect. Some of them have been through some validation, some haven't. They all have some strengths and weaknesses. Well, we've pulled together all of the models and set up a program where we can kind of look at, you know, what they all tell us about risk, and I think come to a better assessment of what someone's risk is and, you know, what the limitations are of, you know, some of the models. And I think that really allows us to advise people in a better way. So one of the other aspects that we spend a fair amount of time on is, You know, I think part of what we need to do is we also need to, you know, help to educate people and talk with them about it. So people are coming in because they're worried about screening. Well, you know, but worried about lung cancer, you know. So it may be that they're worried because of a particular reason, but in reality, they really don't need to worry that much. And if the risk is really low, I think that it's important that we don't just tell them, listen, you're not going to get screened, but that we make them feel comfortable that they're not going to get screened because they understand that their risk is low.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of set up a tool that sort of helps us identify, you know, what are people really worried about when they come in so that we can be sure that we really address their concerns and give them kind of the right information about that and make the right decision about whether screening is really a good thing for them or it's really not necessary. So those are, I think, some aspects that we've set up that I think are, you know, relatively unique.
So how do people get in even to the Yale Scan program? I mean, it sounds like it's a great way, even just that first component of risk evaluation, if you're worried about your risk, how do people even get into that? Do they need to go through their family physician? Do they just show up at your doorstep? How does that work?
Well, they can just show up at our doorstep. So there's a number to call, so 203-688-5864, and, you know, say you're interested in screening. We take a little bit of information down ahead of time, but that's really all it takes to, you know, to come in, you know, and then kind of go through the process of an evaluation, which may or may not include a scan or may or may not include smoking cessation, depending on, you know, depending on the situation.
And so, Frank, are these, it really sounds like you've built this really unique program. So is this something that is available at other cancer centers around the country? Is this available? Are there ways that people can get this information without coming into the center online or through their regular doctor's office? Or is this something that they need to come in and go through this process and get the counseling and so on?
Well, so, you know, we built a very, we spent a year actually building this program, really looking at all the data and the evidence and trying to set up what we really thought was a good program. And, you know, we actually were just selected by the American College of Chest Physicians not too long ago to, you know, as a center of excellence to sort of share our model of how we've done things with other places.
Wow.
Because of how we've set it up. But, you know, the reality is, you know, we're kind of early in setting up lung cancer screening programs. And, you know, if you look across the country, it totally covers the gamut. You know, there are people that are just advertising, if you plunk money down on the table, we'll get you a scan and we'll hand you a report and that's it. And, you know, to me, that's really not a screening program. I think that's dangerous and, you know, not the way to do it. There are a lot of places that have, you know, usually the major kind of cancer centers that many of them are working at setting up screening programs or have set up screening programs. But there's a lot of variation. And, you know, I think, you know, if we look at other cancers that we screen for, so, you know, breast is obviously one where screening's been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are a lot of quality metrics that have been worked out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can't do breast cancer screening, at least not in the United States, without adhering to certain, you know, guidelines and metrics. And these are things that evolved over time.
Mm-hmm.
As, you know, these are markers of what makes a screening program good and what's important in a screening program. We haven't really developed those in lung cancer yet. You know, right now it's a little bit of a kind of wild west. You know, anybody can do anything, and, you know, we haven't really defined these things. There are certainly societies like the, you know, multi-society guideline I was part of, and, you know, others that have, you know, put forth some, you know, potential markers of a good program. But, you know, there's no requirement that anybody adheres to that. So I think you have to be a little bit careful right now in terms of where you get screened and, you know, what actually happens.
So it sounds like this is just a tremendous resource that you've put together where people can come in and they can get a risk assessment and get some counseling. Tell us about the other components of this screening program at Yale. You were mentioning that there's so many components, not only the risk assessment, the counseling, but also smoking cessation, the qualities of the scans, and what you do with those scans going forward. So tell us a little bit more about what happens after somebody comes in, they have their risk assessment, and they're actually at high risk. Then what happens?
Well, smoking cessation has come a long ways, and I have to say I'm really excited about the smoking cessation program that, you know, we have at Yale. We at one time didn't have a very sophisticated smoking cessation program, but, you know, we really have, I think, a top-notch program. There's been a lot of science behind what works and what doesn't work and what works for particular people and particular situations and what doesn't work as well, and it shows that it makes a difference. So I think that's important. We have very carefully sort of worked out the process of how scans are done, their low dose, how they're interpreted. We review scans as a group to kind of make decisions about what we need to worry about and what we don't need to worry about. We've been doing this for, you know, a number of years in terms of just looking at nodules, so I think we have a lot of history to base it on there. And I'm actually pretty comfortable that the group decision is better than any one of us alone,
yeah.
And that, you know, I think we do a good job at sort of taking the worry out for people. I think we can be quite comfortable if we say we don't think this is anything we need to worry about, and also pretty comfortable if we think it is something that we need to chase, that it probably really is something we need to chase. And then, you know, finally, if it's something that, you know, does need to be chased and, you know, turns out to be a lung cancer, well, there's the whole armamentarium, really, of, you know, what to do about that. So there's a, you know, organized program. I talked about that earlier, the thoracic oncology program. Again, that's a multidisciplinary program founded on the principle of more heads are better than one. There is, you know, all of the advances in minimally invasive surgery, in stereotactic radiotherapy that can, you know, very effectively target radiation. There are all the advances in chemotherapy, and, you know, there are a number of lung cancers that, you know, we can identify more or less an on-off switch. You know, we can identify what's driving that cell to grow, and with targeted therapy, we can almost like flip the switch off in those tumors and get them to stop growing. But that takes genetic analysis of those tumors to really pick them out. So that's a level of sophistication that gets to be pretty complex. But, you know, I'm very comfortable that we have all those complexities covered.
Yeah. So with this screening program, getting back to where we kind of started, are you finding that it really works? Are you finding that you're picking up cancers early? Are we making a difference for patients? Are we allowing them to live longer than if they were to wait to get symptoms?
Well, I think, you know, to answer that question, we really need to look at the, big trials that have been done, because it's a little hard to say, well, if you've screened somebody for a year, can you tell if you've made a difference? I think you have to look, you know, with longer term outcomes. You know, one of the issues about screening is that you pick up a broader spectrum of disease. And, you know, what we want to do is we want to particularly pick up the really aggressive, really nasty tumors and get rid of those. Mm-hmm. And if we don't make a difference there, if we only pick up the very slow-growing, very well-behaved tumors, you know, we're going to probably pick up tumors but not have that much impact on are we really saving people's lives. So, you know, I think the big trials show that although the spectrum of disease gets changed a little bit, we do save lives.
Dr. Frank Detterbeck is professor of surgery in the section of thoracic surgery and chief of thoracic surgery at the Yale School of Medicine. If you have questions or would like to add your comments, visit yalecancercenter.org, where you can also get the podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.